folks, we'll go ahead and get the meeting called to order. And first of all, I want to say thank you all for being here. And so I guess we needed a bit bigger room. We didn't really know. So thanks, everybody, for coming. We'll do a quick round of introductions of everybody that's up here and some people that are in the first row. And then we're going to have Mr. Mark Shepherd from House Research give us kind of an overview on the topic. We will then have, I think what we're going to do is have five people from SEIU testify, or SEIU and ASCII. And we're going to try to keep everybody on both sides of the issue as short as possible in the testimony so we can get everybody that wants to speak a chance. And with that, I will introduce myself. I am Joe Hockey. I'm the chair of the Commerce Committee and representative from Chapman.
Joe Atkins, I'm just the road of police in Riverdale Heights. I represent Riverdale Heights, South St. Paul, and South St. Paul.
I'm representing Diane Anderson. I represent 38A, which is the western half of the union and the increase in numbers.
I'm representing Andrea Kiefer from Missouri.
Hi, Tina Lieber from Rochester. Welcome to my district.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Kirk Spencer, and I represent Portland to be Prairie and Minnetonka.
Greg Davids, Kilbourne, Houston, Dallas.
Pat Mazzarol from Bloomington.
Leon Lilly, North St. Paul, Maplewood.
Dwayne Quam, Dodge, Northern Rochester, and Northwestern Homestead County.
And Tom Tilbury with Fridley. It's 51B, which is Fridley, Spring Lake Park, Moundsview, and a little bit of Lane.
Mike Nelson, I represent the 46A, which is the southern half of Wicker Park.
Mike Benson, I'm state representative for the southern portion of Rochester, parts of Homestead and Robeson.
Sheldon Johnson, I represent the southeast part of St. Paul.
I think everybody here probably knows Tim Norton. Sorry. And then Dan?
Dan Dwight, I'm the committee administrator for the House of Commerce.
Steven Lewis, GFB Research.
David Sullivan, BFL Research.
Bethany Ehrenhold, I'm the committee legislative assistant.
Well, I think things are going swimmingly so far. With that, let's turn it over to Mr. Shepherd.
Thank you, Chair Hoppe. I'm not blocking anybody's way before I can talk to everyone. I'm Mark Shepherd from the House Research Department. We're a nonpartisan department that serves the entire membership of Minnesota House. And Chair Hoppe asked me to be here this evening to give an overview of some of the work the House Research has done on the issue that we're going to be discussing tonight. A woman named Anita Newman in our office wrote a memo, two copies of that made available, and it's been around for a while. Anita was unable to be here tonight, so I'm filling in for her. That's why I'm here. In House Research, we started getting some questions about this issue last spring, and it was generated by a number of interest from some people in Rochester and from some other folks around the state. In early summer, some of the legislators asked us to put together some responses to questions that have been asked by a number of people, and that is why Anita did the memo that you have in front of you that's addressed to interested members of the legislature. This was originally put together not based on any discussion with legislators or with anybody from the governor's staff, but rather just our effort to try to put together some information about background that people have been asking us questions about. And as you all know, this is a new issue to many of you. It also was a new issue to us, and we really have not discussed it extensively with either some of the advocates on either side or with folks from the governor's office or the executive branch. And if we do that, as with any new issue, we will learn from you all, from the governor and his staff, and we may have further refined thoughts as we move along. But for now, I'm going to try to just give some of the questions that we have, some of the answers we've been giving to some of the questions as they have risen. People ask about the status of childcare providers under the Public Employment Labor Relations Act. The Public Employment Labor Relations Act is a general law that governs employer-employee relationships in the public sector in Minnesota. And it defines the public employer as the state or another local political subdivision. So our view was that the self-employed home-based child care provider likely would not be a public employer or a public employee under the Public Employment Labor Relations Act. And in Anita's memo, she provides a link to the laws that have the relevant definitions. As I mentioned earlier, this is a new issue, and when we all have to think about new issues, sometimes people bring to our attention new ways of thinking about them. If that occurs, and then of course we'll think further about them. But our thought, as expressed in Anita's memo, was that HELRA would not apply to these groups. Some people had asked us about a theory that had been suggested in other states that because the state or county provides child care assistance to poor child care providers, that might create an employer-employee relationship. But in Anita's research, as she lists here, there's a statute that basically says that is not the case. The receipt of federal, state, or local funds does not establish an employer-employee relationship. And so that is what we have been telling people about that. Then Anita described, she went on to describe some of the process that the Bureau of Mediation Services uses for people that are subject to its laws. And that process, as Anita describes here, is that a group of employees typically fills out a petition for representation. There is then an authorization card process. And if based on that, there are enough interested employees, DMS then issues an order covering employees and holds an election. I know I don't have any inside information about this in the court. Any of you do? I know what I've read in the paper about what has been stated about the possibility of conducting an election, but I work with the legislative branch and we have not had discussions with executive branch officials, and so I don't know what they may have planned. The state does not have any jurisdiction over the National Labor Relations Act, federal law, and there wouldn't be any activity there that would occur under the federal law, under the jurisdiction of the National Labor Relations Board. So there's really no state jurisdiction there. It turns out that is the law that applies. Early on, when Anita wrote this memo, there was some conversation and interest and speculation about an executive order to be issued perhaps by the governor, as had been done in some other states. The governor has since said, what I've heard in the press, that he is not going to proceed by an executive order, so we didn't go into detail on what an executive order authority might be. It's hard to do that without knowing what is under discussion. In general, if governors in this state and others have issued executive orders that have recognized certain groups for honorary purposes, for advocacy purposes, for the work of the group, and those executive orders have not been problematic. It has not been common for governors, at least in Minnesota, to issue executive orders that would affect legal rights and duties and privileges of the people. And so we didn't have any specifics. The governor has since said that he intends not to issue executive order. Anita goes on to report, as I mentioned, this was done as a response to individual legislators who had raised questions. So she mentioned some comments that had been made by representatives of unions who are interested in the issue. I assume they're here, so it would be better for them to report to the committee their comments directly. And then members had asked Anita when she was writing this memo what are some possible legislative steps, and she mentioned the things that are within state jurisdiction, which would be if legislators believe that it was a good idea, they could amend the Public Employment Labor Relations Act to influence the ability of the executive to act one way or the other. So, Mr. Chair, that is my overview. I am happy to answer questions. I will stay in the back of the room when I'm done, and I will cede my seat to someone else who's currently standing.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Members, do we have any questions?
Seeing none.
Thank you,
sir. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Yates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Shepard, as I was reading through this, who would, if you're going to organize, if you're going to organize, who's organizing? If you have a daycare provider in Preston, Minnesota, who are they organizing? Do they have to, what are they doing?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I think that is a question that would be presented perhaps by the group that was seeking to do the organizing. I think the way that folks would typically organize a group in Minnesota would be that a union interested in organizing group of employees would present a petition to the Bureau of Mediation Services, and then it would be up to the Bureau to sort out whether they had jurisdiction over that petition.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Shepard, where I come from, I don't know if any of the daycare providers have any employees. So what would they do? Who are they organizing?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, again, I think that perhaps some of the folks who are going to be doing the organizing might be able to give further background on that, perhaps better than I could. It's my understanding that there have been some organizational efforts that are not classic employee-employer organization efforts, but unions have organized some groups and have been recognized at certain county levels in Minnesota as advocates for child care issues generally, not necessarily for the purpose of bargaining against the county as an employer-employee relationship. So I, to be honest, I'm not certain. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I have never questioned Mr. Shepard's honesty.
Let the record show that Representative Davids has never questioned Mr. Shepard. Members, any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Shepard. And what we're going to do now is we will start with, I think everybody's from SEIU, and we'll start with, from the top of the list, I have Marion Turner. Please come on up. Next person on the list I have is Angela Houston, followed by Michelle Morehouse, Colleen Hess, and Carl Wink. And if you guys could, everybody on both sides could keep your testimony relatively short, we'll do what we can to get everybody up here that wants to speak on both sides of the issue. All of us are here just to learn and hear more about the issue, so we want to hear what all of you are here to say. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Please proceed. Chairman and Member Kay Fagan for giving me 2 minutes to talk. Please pardon my stage
anxiety. Don't worry. You're doing great. Speaking to just a couple of people.
I'm Marion Ruth Turner. I've been a licensed family child care provider in the city of Minneapolis for 40 years, starting in 1972. And it's been a very interesting perspective from which to watch things change over the decades. Today was a typical October morning. After breakfast, we cleared a bookshelf for our ofrenda, a display of photos and flowers for Dia de los Muertos. And then we did Play-Doh and jigsaw puzzles, followed by kitty aerobics, led by my business partner, Michael. And then we have free play outdoors until lunch. All of our breakfast, lunches, and snacks are prepared at home by us. And I have never found a prepared curriculum that I like. There are many companies that make these, but I do my own with science, art, and social skills, and folklore. And I care so much about this issue because of some bad experiences that I've had in those 4 decades. And I have one example that I want to give you, only one of many examples. In the late 80s, the fire inspectors were told that during their inspection, they had to enforce both the fire code and the building code. And the section of building code was the E3, which is a national code for schools or education buildings. No residential building can meet this code. First, we lost the use of our basement playroom. And we said, fine, we'll put in sprinklers, the same kind that apartment buildings have. Nope, that wouldn't do. We offered to add an addition on the house, a playroom built right on the back, which would have been great for us. No, but such an E3 room could not be connected to an R1 house. So we offered to move to a bigger house with everything on the ground floor, but all licensing in Hennepin County had stopped because no residential building can meet this code, therefore why bother with the extensions? So in order to move and get relicensed, we had to change the law. We asked the legislature for help, and we received help, but it took 2 years. And Michael and I were leading the fight alone out of our own pockets. And no association came forward to speak at any of the hearings to save licensed family child care from actual extinction in the state of Minnesota. Why would they refuse to get involved? Well, associations have to get along with the government, partly because they want access to some of the public money for various initiatives to benefit children, also because of a perception of professional dignity. They speak with a soft voice and carry no stick. There's a worry about the dues that maybe might target. I would have been worried about that in my first 2 years in daycare, but after 4 years, I would pay anything, honestly. And there's no difference between my joining a union or by joining one of the dozens of associations that are available. It doesn't raise my fees to my clients, it really doesn't. It's a very small part of the overall budget. And this idea that a union would then be telling me how to run my business is ludicrous. By that logic, licensing now runs my business. I can't do it any other way than I want to. I have to follow the rules. And I do support the idea of licensing. In 1972, I had a real choice to open without bothering with the license. It was kind of rare with that. But I have very rarely regretted that I went through that process, and I go through it again every year. In fact, I support both the idea of unions and of licensing, and I see the anti-union movement as actually being a threat to licensing. Because licensing costs money. There is a legitimate safety interest the state has in having these licenses, these inspections, and I want it to continue. And I think the union would help preserve licensing and making it stronger by giving the public eye on this continuing backward debate defining quality and minimum standards. Fair.
You did a great job. You did very well. Thank you. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, so you're saying that other associations, daycare associations you belong to, you have to pay dues to belong to
those? Yes.
So paying dues to a union would be no different
in your mind
than paying those?
That's right. And I typically belong to at least three of the associations. There's a national one, a state one, and there's the one through whom I get my liability insurance. And I like to belong to more. I like to support them. And each one of them has different strengths and weaknesses. But times have been hard, as you know, and I right now belong to only one association when I have to. But if a union were available, I would join it in a minute. It's a kind of a technical support that the associations can't do.
Representative Sensi,
I'm not all that familiar with daycare providers and the whole industry. Two questions. How much is the daycare association? What is an annual membership for a dues for that? And then what is the dues for the union?
There is no dues set yet because the union doesn't exist yet. We have to call it when we find out.
Okay.
And then it would be set according to what, how many services we want to provide.
Yeah, you mean what you pay now for the association?
I think it's $65 per year.
Yeah. Are you required for certification of law in the organization?
No, only for insurance. What was the question?
Which is necessary for the license.
Sorry.
The question was, are you required to, currently required to belong to any of the associations?
For certification.
For certification.
The real answer is no, I'm not, but sometimes there are circumstances that require it.
Thank you very much. You did a nice job testifying. Angela Houston. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record and we'll start with your career.
I'm going to
all year coming up, I think all of the testifiers we have listed are from SEIU. You should acknowledge that there are people from ASCII here too. So just to make sure everybody knows, and I think, sir, if you want to stand up for a second, everybody would see it.
No,
that's fine. Just you're just wearing the shirt, so everybody knows. You're sort of part of this. But thank you for being here, and even though you're not testifying, thank you for being here. And ma'am, go ahead, whenever you're ready, please start. And I'll ask for the people in back, if you could speak up. We don't have a sound system. It's all that you taught. And the first two testifiers were great, but if everybody on both sides can try to shorten it up a little bit so we have enough time to get to everybody, we would appreciate it.
Member of the union, that there be the changes that support working families. What would those be? Earlier comments you mentioned that there be the changes that support working families. I'd like to know what those are.
Well, we have quality, affordable quality family, child care, good education. They retain the quality providers the way they can rest assured they can be at work. My child is getting everything that I would be giving them plus more.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Morehouse, aren't you providing all that now?
Yes, but without a voice. If there's a concern, I probably would like them. I have no one backing me when I have a concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for watching. Nice job. Ms. S. And then Carl, will you after? Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for
for allowing me to speak to you this evening. My name is Colleen Hess, and I'm a small business owner in the community of Elgin, and I'm a proud working parent of two boys. I've come here tonight to talk about how quality, affordable childcare has benefited my family's life and the importance of work of the work of childcare providers like my provider Cheryl Hunter. My husband and I are constantly juggling the demands of running my small business while raising our two boys. In-home providers are small businesses also, with small groups of children that can provide a loving environment that feels like a home for our boys. We know how hard providers work. We support a provider in any way we can. She makes it possible for us to go to work each day. As a small business owner, it is important to me and the community I live in that we continue to support other small businesses, such as the 11,000 family child care providers in our state. Peace of mind that comes from knowing your children are in a safe, stable home where they are learning is priceless. I believe there's no more important work than raising our children, and our state should support providers and listen to them. I support Cheryl Hubbard's efforts to join with other providers in forming a union. Family child care providers should be valued for their work so they are able to support their own families. Providers can lend a valuable voice to improving child care. I want other parents to be able to have the peace of mind and great care that my provider offers. Parents like me depend on stable, quality child care, and the providers we work with are experts in how to provide it.
Thank you. Questions, Member? Representative
Baum. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're not the first one to mention SAFE. Is there the inference that our licensed daycare system is unsafe presently?
I don't think there's the inference, but when people have more of a say in how they are being regulated, then I think maybe then they would be more compliant with the rules that are being set forward. I don't know how to exactly answer that question, but sure.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Nice job. Carl Lee. If you could identify yourself for the record and start from every room. Welcome, by the way.
My name is Carl Lee. Mr. Chairman and committee members. This is my son, Noah.
Show the crowd.
I think unionizing child care providers would be good for the providers. It's going to be good for my family. It's good for my child. Why my child care provider is so important to me is because it gives him a grounding, a sense of community. He grows up with the same child care provider in the home. It's not some center with the staff turnover rates. It could be there's generations that go to some of these professional child care providers' homes. And I really do believe that these child care providers getting a voice when they don't have one now would be very beneficial. Right now they're scattered. The regulations are made without a say of talking to them, it seems like. So I really am in support of my first speaker, Ms. Turner, who's part of Child Care Provider Together, and our next two speakers who are part of SEIU. Like I said, I can't say enough. I really do believe that this will help parents and kids, and it'll help the child care provider to have a place, make their business place for us, make it more affordable. Because honestly, I am a union member. I work for the state of Minnesota. I work for corrections, actually, an adult name. and I think that the cost of me going to the center would really hurt me. I live in Casson, driving terrible. If I had to raise my child care rates, I don't know if I could do that.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Thank you very much. With that, is there anybody else from ASPE or SEIU, anybody else that wanted to testify? Thank you. You all did a very nice job. With that, we'll start with... with Becky Swanson. And by the way, not everyone up here is a member of the Commerce Committee. We're all House members, but we're trying to recruit. We're always trying to get more members in Commerce. You're all welcome. Feel free to attend all of our meetings. Sure. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your
Good evening. My name is Becky Swanson, and I'm a health care provider in the Sheriff's County. And I have 24 years of experience. I have 6 years experience as a director of the Association, and 18 years on finance. Why am I here tonight? Well, I'm here tonight because the union came out from that line there. And they wanted to find out if I wanted to be part of the union. Only they didn't introduce themselves as the union, they introduced themselves as its first. It was a busy time of my day, and I didn't have time to talk to them. I was able to, after pushing the issue for a little bit, they did admit that they were from the union, and it was a young man from New York. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, what is a young man from New York doing in Minnesota? At least it was summertime, so he wasn't freezing there. But I wondered, why do I have a young man here at my door interested in telling me about the union? Well, it caused me to wonder what in the world is going on. And this has happened over a period of years. The first time they came to my door was in 05. They came back in 07, and then once again in 2010. So I decided that I would contact some of my fellow child care providers, because we as providers do network, and we help each other as providers. At least in Dakota County we do. I can't speak for other counties. But if I have an opening, I can call a fellow provider and say, I have an opening. Do you have any family calls? Would you please send them my way? So we do network together. We help each other maintain quality and maintain our facilities in order to take care of children. So I started asking around. And so in the process of asking around, I met a wonderful group of people. And we've kind of joined together to inform and educate, is what we like to call ourselves, is what we're doing. We're informing providers in the state of Minnesota about the union coming. We're trying to educate the providers in Minnesota that let's not always look at things at face value. Let's see what they really are offering. Is it for you or is it not for you? I personally chose that it is not for me. I am a private business owner. I do not work for the state of Minnesota. I don't work for the union. I have no employees. If I could not speak for myself, why am I here tonight? Obviously, I can have a seat at the table. I'm speaking to you tonight, and I'm being heard. We have a problem that numbers are being twisted. I was listening to the earlier testimony. I also take care of 10 children. And I don't need to break down whether or not some of those children are on subsidies or not. Because if you have a child on subsidies, their family pays the difference. So if I have 10 children I take care of, I charge $150 a week. It means I am making $1,500 a week. I work 60 hours a week. I break that down. I am making $25 an hour. That is well above minimum wage. So I do not know how you can say we are not earning a decent income. Do I need to break it down whether or not they are subsidy kids or they are private households who are paying child care in my home? I don't think that's a necessity. If I do have a subsidy child, the subsidy that I get reimbursed is basically $135 for the week. The parent pays the difference. I am not losing or gaining money from subsidies. If subsidies are lower, the families know that the copay that they pay me makes up the difference. I've given you a handout tonight. This is what the cards looked like when the union came to my door. There are three different cards. This is the most recent card from SEIU. And it does not say until you actually read into it that it is for the union. I did not sign the card that day. I don't ever choose to sign the card.
I don't belong to my association because I don't feel I need the association to speak for me. They offer wonderful trainings. I go to the trainings. I pay for the trainings. Licensing, I have never had a problem in licensing in 24 years as a center director or in my home. They have rules and the regulations. If I have a question about anything, I can pick up the phone and I can call my licensor. She talks to me. If I have a legislative problem, I pick up my phone and I call my legislator. I have also picked up my phone and I've called Governor Dayton. Unfortunately, he has not met with me. I have met with my legislators. I have met with my licensor. I feel I have a voice at the table. I make a good living. Why do I need a union? I would have to pay dues. I choose right now to belong to the organizations I want to. I can pay dues if I want to them. If the union is put through, and there is one exception tonight, Governor Dayton can put through an executive order for a vote. We don't know how that vote would look like. I'm asking for that not to happen.
Thank you need to wrap up. Well, yeah, if you could. We're
okay.
Running a little over
time. All right. I thank you tonight for listening to me. I am a child care provider. My occupation is caring for children. I'm here tonight because I feel there's so many providers in Minnesota who do not have an ear because they're not here tonight because they're busy in their homes and they're too far from this facility to come. But I thank you. I want to get back to child care. I want to stop all this. I'm asking that there not be a vote. I'm asking that we stop the unionization now.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Ms. Swanson, I was said in earlier testimony that quite a few daycare providers are fudging their records. Are you aware of any of that?
Whether or not some, well,
falsifying
the
records.
I do not know of anyone falsifying the records personally. What people do with their own business would be theirs. I'm sure we can look at any profession and find people falsifying records.
Well, not the insurance business. Others possibly.
I do not falsify my records. I can testify to that.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Swanson, you said you choose not to join the union, correct?
Correct.
Mr. Chair. Don't you want to stop everybody else from being having a vote and join and not and be able to choose to join
okay,
the union
no.
if they want to?
No,
I mean,
if
you said you don't want to vote, that's why I'm asking.
Right. Okay. All right. Mr. Chair. What I'm trying to say is if they would like to be part of the union, that is fine. What I object to is what is called a fair share fee. The union would represent under an umbrella all child care providers, whether we belong to the union or not. So because a part of the fair share fee, I would be responsible for paying a portion to the union for the services that they're providing. There are union dues and union fair share fees.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Swanson. In fairness, and I was a business agent for the Carpenters Union, so
okay.
I understand about fair share fees and that. But that's only if it's a public employee union that fair share fees are, my understanding, and I don't know how it falls here. So if you don't join the union, as a carpenter, if you don't join the Carpenters Union and you don't work for a public employer, you don't pay fair share fees, you're just not a member of the union.
In Minnesota, though, who is the union going to represent? We're not employees, we are small business owners.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman. I guess the question I have is this different? How would this be different than any other daycare organizations that you belong to? If you belong to a daycare organization, how would this be different than the American Medical Association, the Chamber of Commerce? If you choose not to join the Chamber of Commerce, you don't pay dues to the Chamber of Commerce. As a business person, if you don't belong, if you're a doctor and you don't belong to the American Medical Association, you don't pay dues to those. It would be no different than any other organization like that. If you choose to, as a previous testifier said, she was a member. She used to be a member mm-hmm. of multiple organizations. Now she's a member of only one. She's not paying fair share dues to those other ones. So how would this be different than that?
Ms. Watson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of the difference between the union versus another organization, I chose not to belong to the Child Care Association. The fee for that is a one-year fee. And as one put it tonight, was $65. I'm not sure of the fee because I do not belong to it. With the union, because they are not organized, we do not know what the dues would be yet. We do not know what the fair share fees would be yet. So if they are organized, if I have children on state subsidies, would I not be required because of the state subsidy to pay a fair share fee?
Representative Belson, do you want to?
Mr. Wall, according to what Mr. Shepherd said, I guess the answer to that would be no, because you don't fall under Public Employee Labor Relations Act, and so I don't believe you would be responsible, but that would be something that have to come forward.
And that's why, at this point, I choose not to belong to the union, and I would not choose to belong to the union, for the simple reason is we are being asked to vote for something we do not know what the guidelines or the fees or the dues would be.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Watson. This is sort of a fascinating issue for me when we heard Mr. Shepherd originally discuss it, because it's somewhat uncharted territory, I think, in Minnesota. I know it's happened elsewhere. My request of you and then those others that might desire to testify, I think that is a central issue, is whether or not you object to it. You may not want to be in a union. I practice law in South St. Paul. I don't know if I'd join a lawyer's union or not if it was given to me. But I don't think I'd object if somebody else down the road wanted to join that association or union. So my real question for those that are coming to testify is, do you object to other people, other providers joining if they want to? And then
no,
the second question, and you said that, you don't object to that at all. The second question then is, do you object to paying a fair share fee?
And that I do.
Clearly you do. And my request of those that are coming to testify is, it strikes me that perhaps the real issue here is we don't object to other people. If they want to join a union or an association, they have and I see a lot of folks nodding now. Then the question is, but if they do, I don't want to have to pay for it if I opt not to join that association or union or whatever organization it is. So I don't mean to carve into your 2 minutes.
No, that's fine.
But at least for me, and I think a lot of folks sitting here at the table, if you could just tell me how you feel about that, I think it would make a difference to a lot of people sitting here at the table.
Mm-hmm. And I do not have an issue with the unions. And I would personally choose not to belong to the union. I would have an issue with if I had to be put in a position that I had to pay a fair share fee.
Other questions, members? Then we will go next to Pat. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And while Pat is coming up, you might have noticed that we went slightly over the two-minute mark with Ms. Swanson. We went over the two-minute mark with the first five testifiers, too. Generally what happens is you notice the first people that testified, the first couple were a little bit longer, and then it gets slower. And you'll start to see members will have fewer questions. Right, members?
Start to see it warmed up.
Oh, boy, it's just getting warmed up. But please proceed with the record, and we'll try to keep tightening the time down a little bit just to respect everybody else's time. So feel free to identify yourself for the tape and start when you're ready.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Pat Gentz, and I've been a licensed family child care provider in Dakota County for 28 years. I've also been an educator and mentor for many family child care providers in my community. When a union representative came to my door early last spring, and because he came during nap time, I was able to spend 35 minutes visiting with him. I wanted to hear what he had to say, and I wanted to learn more. The first thing he told me was that the union would be able to offer me more training and professional development opportunities. I told him that we already had an abundance of training opportunities and resources available to us, and I think others tonight will be sharing in greater detail about that. But in Dakota County, our local association, which has a membership fee of $35 per year, they not only provide free training throughout the year, but most of the training that they offer is grant approved and also approved by the Minnesota Center for Professional Development. I was able to get my Child Development Associate Certificate, my national accreditation through NAFCC, and a Bachelor's in Child Development, all without the help of a union. Then this gentleman asked me who would go to bat for me if I ever had a problem. I told him that in 28 years, I have never had one issue where I could not find the appropriate resources to find a suitable solution. And then he asked me, well, what about having a seat at the table? I wish he could see me right now, sitting at the very table he was referring to. I'm here tonight because of the union, but I did not need the union to get me here. He told me I'd be able to get health care coverage, and I told him that, like many other providers, I was fortunate to have health insurance through my husband's employer. And if I knew then what I know now, I would have also shared with him that only in a few other states has a union been able to negotiate limited health coverage, and that in most states, in fact, no health care options have been negotiated by the union. Finally, he told me that the union could be my voice. I told him that I would never ever want anybody or any union speaking on my behalf, not when it comes to my children and my families. He also shared with me that they were just about done going door-to-door in Dakota County, and that the majority of providers had signed cards of providers reached out to over 700 providers, and we had countless providers shared how they were misled by union representatives. Many shared that they had signed cards having no idea that they were signing up in support of unionization. Others shared that they felt pressured to sign cards. Many others believed they had signed a card simply to receive more information. This calling effort took several weeks, and with over 700 providers in my county, only a very small fraction indicated to us that they were for the union. It troubled me that so few indicated they were in favor of unionization, and yet the union claimed a majority of the providers had signed cards. This is why I am compelled to continue educating and informing providers about what is taking place. I want to be clear that I am not opposed to unions in general. My husband and I were both union members when we worked in the grocery industry. My dad was a member of the Carpenters Union for as long as I can remember. I have several clients that are union members, and I understand that in some instances, unions can be beneficial. In this instance, however, it is completely different because we are independent business owners. I want to continue on the path that has proven successful for me for 28 years. I am an independent, self-employed small business owner who loves caring for children and their families. Together with the parents, I have established trusting relationships with which a union cannot help me. I already have everything I need to successfully run my family child care business. And most importantly, my families know that above anything else, I am going to love their children. And as I stated at the Senate hearing, you cannot legislate love, nor can you unionize love. Thank you very much for your time this evening. I'm really grateful that you have given us this opportunity to share our voice. Thank you.
Thanks, members, questions? This chair. Anybody questions? Anybody?
Thanks, buddy.
Max, Representative.
We used to be friends.
Just the same question, because I'm from Dakota County, so sure. I think we're kind of fortunate to have our former daycare provider was a member of the same association.
Okay.
Just raved about it.
Okay,
I had the same question for you that I have for Ms. Swanson. Do you have any objection? If others want to join, be it an association or a union, perhaps not in Dakota County or someplace else in order to have those benefits, would you have any objection?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. One of my concerns is that even though I may not have to join the union, it's my understanding anyway, that they would still represent me. They would still be the voice for family child care, and that's what bothers me. But I have nothing but rave reviews about my local association, which I've been a member of for years and years. There are so many things that they provide, from mentoring and networking, a provider directory where providers can call and get, be on a list where parents can find child care. They have a toy co-op that is just the coolest opportunity ever. Fabulous training by, like I said, trainers that are offering training that is both, most of it is grant approved and also approved by the Minnesota Center for Professional Development. So I think that we cannot sell short what our county associations are doing across the state, not to mention the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, which is the best. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you. I wish everybody across Minnesota had the same opportunity as folks in Dakota County, and perhaps Olmsted has the same sort of opportunity as well. It's quite an organization in Dakota County. We just wish everybody had the access to an association like that.
Thank you.
Representative Stitcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Gans, sounds as though you and some of the other justifiers are okay with people joining a union if they choose.
Absolutely.
Do you understand or do you have an opinion as to why there needs to be a vote across the state of Minnesota? If you can already join the union, why do you think that there needs to be a vote?
May I defer that question to somebody else that I think might be able to provide a better answer? Is that...
We're from
okay?
The legislature. We're big on
defense. Okay, cool. I think that there's others in our group that would be just right. Better prepared to answer that. Explain it better.
And Ms. Chair, is Mr. Shepherd still, is he hiding in the back?
He's right outside.
He might be best off to explain it. My understanding of federal antitrust law is that it prevents the ability for folks to organize, whether we call it a union or not, but for independent business people to collectively negotiate is actually, unless there is some order via the legislature or from the governor that would enable that to occur. So it's actually right now, you can't do it, at least with respect to anything involving money. So it is something that there would need to be some sort of action taken in order to allow people to do it. But I'd rather have, rather than me as a legislator, I'd rather have Mr. Shepherd at some point confirm that. He's the smartest guy here.
But I hope he
perhaps would afterwards we can just have Mr. Shepherd confirm why there would be the need to have the ability to join.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And what we'll do, we'll have Elaine Greer come up next. And folks, if you happen to testify in front of the Senate, they had a hearing 3 weeks ago or a month ago. If you were there testifying, if you could maybe defer your comments and let others speak that didn't get a chance. One of the reasons we wanted to come to Rochester is to get outside of the Twin Cities and let other people speak. So we're happy to hear from everybody, but if you could kind of jump to the back of the list, we'd appreciate it. With that, identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Elaine Greer. I am a family child care provider from Eagan. And just as you say that, I apologize because I was in Utah at the other hearing. So I decided to come down to Rochester to make my voice heard.
You took the kids to Utah? Well,
that's no! We had a wedding in the mountains. It's wonderful. So I am an educator. As well as a family child care provider for the past 38 years. And I'm here as an advocate for Union Free Minnesota. I would like to address some of the things that have been said, if I could just quickly. We do have a legislative arm representing to us. The Minnesota State Family Child Care Association is one, and Child Care Works is another. So if we do have legislative issues, we can go to either of those organizations and get support. I also reiterate with Pat that our local association is fabulous and really offers a lot of opportunity for us to get training, free training, the fees only being $35 a year. I had the union representative visit my home this summer. And I think this is just kind of a theme that's going across the state, and I don't know if you're hearing it, but I want you to hear it, that they are coming and visiting us during our busy time of the day. They are coming during lunch. They are coming when we have 8 or 10 children to care for. And so a lot of providers are feeling kind of harried, like, okay, I just want to get rid of you, so I'll sign it, or I don't have time to hear what you have to say, but it sounds good, so I'll sign it. And so a lot of these signatures are happening, and people are realizing, oh my gosh, I signed this and I really don't believe in it. And so I want that to be perfectly clear, is that I think it's a very small group of providers that really are interested in the union. And isn't this a democracy? And I am not against them joining unions, but I am against them being falsely informed of information regarding that union. And I, of course, do not want to join a union, have very bad experience with my husband in the past with unions. And that, of course, does influence me and in my thinking. The one thing I did ask the representative, because I do pay my own health insurance, is, you know, tell me, you know, what are you doing for providers for health insurance? And he said, well, in some states they are paying as little as $10 a month for their health coverage. And that is so totally ridiculous that, I mean, the union is not going to have money left over to pay for your health insurance. And so I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. I, too, want to reiterate that child care providers have excellent training available to us, and I think even outstate, there is the Eager to Learn program where they can learn online, and libraries are available with computers. And so I think if you are looking for a good quality training, you can find it. It's certainly rural and otherwise. I recently went to Alexandria, and they had their professional conference up there, and I was representing Union Free Minnesota, and I wanted to share the information with providers so that they were very clear about what the union represented and what it did not. And while I was there, two providers did share with me that they were misinformed when they signed the card. They thought that they were just going to be receiving information, and so I did steer them to the avenue to rescind their signatures. Approximately 20 providers stated to me that they were against the union, and only one of everyone I spoke to that day, there were 125 providers that were present, said that they were in support of the union. So that's what I'm hearing, is there really isn't support for it across the board. I am near retirement age, and this isn't going to be affecting me for the long run. But I'm here today because I really believe in the professionalism of our businesses of family child care. I want each of us to excel for what we have to offer for quality child care and not for what the union decides is important for us. I'm here today to guard the sanctity of the right to operate my own business without the interference of the union. That is, in my opinion, very self-serving. And lastly, I'm here today with my heart connected to the families and the children that I serve, knowing that unfortunately they, in the end, may bear the additional undue expenses imposed by the outside movement, the union, which is of no value to me or them.
Thank you very much. Members, questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
What I tried to do is get everybody on the list that wasn't from Rochester or right around Rochester, so people that were farther away, if they needed to leave, they could leave. What maybe we should do is look to more of the opponents of this, and if you guys have somebody that wants to come up first, feel free. Otherwise, I can start at the top of the list and we can go that way. Everybody's pointing at everyone else. Well, why don't we do this? I'll start at the top of the list, and if you guys figure out who you want to have come up after, we can go that way. Just let me know. Jackie Harrington is the first one.
Molly over here is a parent to be
I meant to say Molly. If there are any parents or babies, let us know, because we do want to get you up so you can...
And then I'll go.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for letting me know. I didn't see the baby. Very quiet baby.
For now.
I'll just lean back a little bit.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Plum.
Mr. Chair, a question was brought up and it was addressed in the nonpartisan sheet, so it's a...
Let's wait until... Was that Representative Atkins' question?
Yes, so okay. It's already addressed. Yes.
We can come back to that when he gets back. Feel free to identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
I'm Molly Thorson of Byron, Minnesota, just outside of Rochester here.
Okay, and I'll just interrupt. Very cute baby, by the way.
Thank you. I brought her to win you all over. No. I'm the parent of three small children, all of whom attend full-time in-home daycare in the loving home of Jackie Harrington, who you mistook for me earlier. We've chosen to have our children spend the day in Jackie's care because we see her as a true partner in raising them. In researching the issue of the unionization of child care providers, I've been unable to find hard evidence for the argument that being part of the union will somehow increase the quality of care my children receive. And as a parent, that is of utmost importance to me with this issue. Jackie testified at the Senate hearing on this issue a couple weeks ago and has done a fantastic job conveying to us what this decision means for her, her small business, as well as us as paying clients. Without the benefit of improving her business, adding union dues to her list of monthly costs isn't good for her or for us and our children. We are afraid that any increases to her fees passed on to us as a result of her being forced to be a member of the union will make it too expensive for us to continue to send our children to her each day. The cost of the remarkable care that our children receive from her is nearing the point of being cost prohibitive. Our monthly child care checks are by hundreds of dollars more a month than our mortgage. However, we see that money as being the most important money we spend every month. So that's okay. The check is easy to write. We'd have it no other way. And we see it as a true investment in our children's futures. Just like other parents in the room, I'm sure can agree that the in-home family feel that our children receive in all your homes is of utmost importance, and we would have it no other way. Please consider that these are small business owners who are not seeking representation or a seat at the table. For the most part, they've chosen to be independent business owners and would like to stay that way. I have an incredible amount of respect for Jackie and the other in-home child care providers. Their job is some of the most important work to be done in our communities. And anyone who has spent considerable time with infants, toddlers, and preschoolers realizes how difficult it can be. I don't know how they do it. I can't handle my three at home by myself. Add five more to that, put them in a different house. I don't know how she does it every day. And realize how difficult it can be, and for the most part, these women and a few men provide outstanding care. It was a difficult decision for me as a mother to continue working after the birth of my children, but the pain of that decision has certainly been lessened as a result of the loving care our provider gives our children every single day. Thanks for your careful consideration of both sides, or all sides, of this issue, but I look forward to your decision in favor of the independent child care provider.
Thank you.
That's it.
Questions, members? Was a nice young mother with the adorable baby. Anybody? Thank you very much. You did a
yes.
Very nice job.
I'll excuse us to go home and go to bed, I think.
Anybody else that wants to leave and go to bed, feel free.
Oh, everybody's going to stand up and think
about it. No. You have to stay. Is there anybody else I didn't see? Is there anybody else here that needs to leave earlier or has a baby? If not, Jackie and Ms. Harrington, if you want to come up. That baby is so quiet, we didn't know it was here.
She's a great baby.
Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Good evening.
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, Jackie Harrington. Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Harrington, and I have been providing care in Rochester for 12 years. I sincerely appreciate this opportunity to speak to you about this matter that I have been working against for the past 6 years, the effort to organize family child care providers who are independent small business owners. And I do oppose this effort. As I testified at the Senate hearing months ago, one of my concerns in this multifaceted issue has been the undemocratic voting process reported in the other states where unions have been formed outside of labor law. And I will cite just two examples in which the unions were formed. In Illinois, the Chicago Tribune reported in 2005 that a mere 27% of providers approved the union representation, and with that vote, nearly 50,000 child care providers were unionized. In Michigan, Fox News reported in 2010 that a mere 15% of the providers approved representation for 40,000 child care providers. It is of utmost importance that Minnesota providers do not have union representation placed on their small businesses based on this kind of voting process. Ultimately, though, I believe a vote should not even be in consideration, as the licensed family child care providers are not public or private employees. The basis upon which the unions have been formed and have been the basis upon which unions are formed. We are small, independent business owners. So if Governor Dayton proceeds with the executive order, as he has indicated he is considering the option of a vote, and recognizes the bargaining rights for child care providers, with that vote, I feel a whole new Pandora's box has been opened. If a vote proceeds and providers overwhelmingly vote against union representation, the bargaining rights recognized in that executive order will not be gone. Union organizers will be free to restart the organizing campaign, returning to providers' homes, which is their place of business, to solicit support. This cycle really needs to end. Members of the Senate, or of the House, sorry, and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you this evening, and I really look forward to the resolution and a means to stop this effort to unionize family child care providers who are small business owners.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Harrington. Question you talked about in Illinois is that the percentages of the people that voted that passed that, that election that they had, and that was the percentage of the overall amount. And so the people that didn't vote were counted as a no vote or a yes vote.
Okay. I did copy in the text from the article. In Local 880's election, 16,700 of the state's 49,000 child care workers mailed in ballots, officials said. Of those who cast ballots, more than 80% voted to join SCIU. And if I could defer to Jennifer Parrish, she has a little more information about how it was determined who got a ballot, because not all providers received a ballot.
Representative Nelson. Mr. Chair, and Ms. Harrington. Mm-hmm. I guess this is sort of like our election process. I mean, my Senate district, we just had a special election because my senator passed away in June. And the voter turnout of all the registered voters was only 17%. Mm-hmm. Does that make my new senator that much less legitimate as a senator because she got the majority? She got 61% of the 17% that voted. If you do the math, technically, she only got elected with a very small percentage of the registered voters in the city, in the legislative district. Does that make her, with your argument that you're making there, does that make her position as a state senator illegitimate because she only got a small percentage of the total registered voters? And this is something we have in all elections. We don't have 100% voter turnout, which is a shame.
Correct, Mr. Chair. The difference between what happened there and what happened in Illinois is that not all providers were given the opportunity to vote. It was based on their subsidy program, so providers on the subsidy program got the opportunity to vote. And I'm sorry, but Jennifer, if I'm wrong about that, please speak up, but I think I'm right.
That's what we were told, that providers who did not have children on the subsidy program
providers who were not even licensed but had children on the subsidy program were eligible.
Would you come forward and identify yourself for the record and say that officially?
I hear lots of good stories, but it doesn't make sense.
Could you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Jennifer Parrish.
Okay. And if this was an election in Illinois, where are you getting the information?
We got it from, actually, let's see here, we've heard it from a few different places. We got it from the providers of the association down in Illinois, who were opposed to the unionization. We got it from, I believe we actually got it from Denise a couple of years ago, when we were asking why providers weren't getting ballots, because many of the providers in the association did not get ballots. And she said that because they didn't have children on the subsidy program.
And she's
and this isn't the only state that this has happened. In Maryland, the same thing happened. It was based off of the subsidy program. So providers who didn't have a child in the subsidy program did not even get a ballot. Unless there's another reason why they didn't get a ballot that she could answer to. Many providers did not get a ballot.
Feel free to come on up.
I'm Denise Volpian with SEIU Kids okay. First. Organizing director, and I'm also a provider for 27 years retired. We're only here tonight to discuss Minnesota. We are not Illinois, and we are not Maryland.
Okay.
Oh, and the American Arbitration Association, who was hired to count the ballots, also told me that it only went out to the providers on the subsidy program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to the young lady in the second row, we're not those other states, but I do like to know other states do, so we don't make the same bad decisions they do.
Well, I think all of us are glad we're not Illinois or Maryland. We're not at the Capitol, but it is a committee hearing, so let's keep the applause to ourselves. And as long as you're here, are you on the list of testifiers?
I am, but I testified at the Senate hearing, so I can okay. give my time to somebody else. I did want to clarify something, though, if that's possible. The reason why we are opposed for the most part is because the proposed unions, the unions that are being proposed to Governor Dayton, cover all licensed family child care providers, whether you want to take part of it in it or not. That's what we're opposed to. If providers want to join together, like the Carpenters Union, that's fine with me. That's absolutely fine. That's not what is being proposed here. There is no option B where we can decide to be a Carpenters Union or we can just be full union. This is the proposal that's on the table right now is all licensed family child care providers, and we have seen where this has happened in other states. And providers have been assessed fair share fees in the hundreds of dollars in a year. So I just wanted to clarify that this isn't something where it's optional, unfortunately.
Thank you, members. Any questions? With that, we'll keep going down the list. And if you want to cede your time, if anybody that's already spoken in front of the Senate or in the interest of time don't feel you need to speak, that's fine with us. We'll start at the top with Melissa Gerard. Is Melissa here? Okay. How about Duane Mulholland? Conveniently close to the front. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed when you're ready.
Duane Mulholland. Good evening, Mr. Chair and fellow representatives. I want to thank you tonight for taking the time to hear the small business person's side of the story. I'm a child care provider in Rochester, Minnesota, who's concerned about losing my small business freedoms to a nationally operated union, and I do not support their effort to organize family child care providers. I've been successful running my business and have been supported by my local child care resource and referral agency and with the oversight of the county licensing offices. I have no use for a union. I'm a business owner, not an employee. I am attending Concordia University of St. Paul for a BA in child development. This educational opportunity is a direct result of the exceptional support child care providers receive through state grant administered locally from the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency. When I asked the union organizer that approached me at my home how the union proposes to improve upon the current offerings of these organizations or healthcare, she indicated that they wouldn't know what changes they could make until a contract was voted on, even including membership dues. When asked about the stipulations of the contract, they say there is no contract. How many people do you think I could get to come to my small business if I just said, just trust me? How well would you do if you came before Minnesotans and with a state budget, but the numbers were not made public? The union knows what the contract will look like. They have already done this in 15 other states. In a time of economic downturn, I have trouble swallowing the benefits the union promises. Does the union have a money tree? Is that where this money is going to come from? If not, where is the money going to come from? I'm a believer in the system of free enterprise, and these unions threaten to destroy that for small business owners like me. We cannot allow a union to strip our local small businesses of their rights to represent themselves. If we do, which small businesses will be next? Today I come before you to ask that you acknowledge all 11,000 Minnesota licensed child care providers and ensure that all 11,000 of these providers get a voice or are represented in this matter. I'm asking my elected officials to level the playing field between these national unions and Minnesota child care providers. Please allow us the opportunity to decide the fate of our own businesses.
Thank you. Questions, members? Representative Lieber.
Thank you. I'm just not understanding what rights you're worried about losing, or, you know, when you talk about small business freedoms, could you be a little bit more specific about what you're worried that is going to be, that there's, because some people I'm hearing concerned about what they'd have to pay, and that's something at least is understandable, but I'm not understanding what rights you're afraid that you would lose under this proposal.
Mr. Mull.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The way I see it is some of the providers have come up here and talked about the organizations that they choose to belong to. The senator asked about elections, and not everybody turns out in election. We have a government. That was decided a long time ago. We have a choice whether we turn out or not. In other states, providers aren't being given this option. I belong to many organizations that I choose to belong to. I belong to the National Association for the Education of Young Children, the Exchange Early Childhood Leaders, I'm a Minnesota Association for the Environmental Education, and the Minnesota Professional Development Association. I choose to belong to these memberships. If they don't, if they fail me in any way, I just don't pay dues the next year. I opt out. From what I'm hearing here is there is no opt out. I cannot get out of this. If they envelop us, we're forced to pay dues. It's no longer an option. That's a freedom that I will lose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so if I'm understanding you then, the rights that you're talking about is the very right to belong or not to belong. That's it. I mean, that's the only thing I'm hearing here, is that you are worried that you'd be forced to be a fair share member, I guess. Or are there other rights that you're afraid that the union would take away from you? I thought it was something more than that, I guess.
Mr. Mall.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I guess I am concerned when the union approached me, they have no answers for these questions. When I asked, when they approached me in my home and gave me a flyer, they were saying many things that needed to be fixed that I disagree, that don't need to be fixed. I am receiving grant money already to go to college. I received grant money to attend Eager to Learn and took 135 hours of training to receive my CDA. Those are the things I'm afraid will be in jeopardy. Where will this money come from if this child care resource and referral already provides these trainings? If these other state grants are they going to be at risk? If we're paying more in taxes, or if we're not going to pay more? They're saying we're not going to pay more, we're going to get health benefits, we're going to get all of these things that we don't have now, where will the money come from? No one is answering that question. If they are going to get that money from current programs, they're going to double dip out of things that are already getting grant money, will I lose access to those types of grants?
Representative Lee, anything else? Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Mulholland.
Thank you.
Next is Shan Stewart. Thanks for sitting so close.
please identify yourself for the tape and proceed when you're ready?
My name is Sean Stewart.
Sean, sorry.
It's a unique spelling.
We forgot to tell you, budget cuts.
No, it's a unique spelling. It is S-H-A-M.
Okay. I'll stick with budget cuts.
Mr. Chair and committee members, an association, combination, or organization of employees who band together to secure favorable wages, improve working conditions, better work hours, and to resolve grievances against employers. That is the definition of a union. I am an independent small business owner. I have no employees. Who is SEIU going to bargain for me against? Myself? I secure my wages. I set my hours of operation. I provide my own working conditions. What place does a union have in my small business? The answer is none. I watched the Senate committee hearings on September 22nd. I met in person with Denise Welty, the SEIU representative, to get answers about what the union can do for providers. There are no clear answers. There are no written promises. There are no guarantees, except there will be dues. Dues that reduce what programs I can offer to the children in my care. Kids don't come first for SEIU. I am here tonight to represent myself, to my legislators, to not allow this union to form. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart. Questions, members? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next is Carrie Fairclough. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed whenever you're ready.
Good evening. My name is Carrie Fairclough, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak about this important issue with you. I've been a self-employed licensed family child care provider since 1995 right here in Rochester. As with other independent small business owners in this great state of Minnesota, the success or the failure of my child care business rests solely on my shoulders. Accepting and following the regulations set forward by the state of Minnesota for licensed family child care programs is just an expectation, just as other industries are also regulated. While we may share a common link as licensed family child care providers, our individual child care businesses are each uniquely different. My business success has been determined completely by my own goals, my work ethic, professional development, and market-driven capabilities. I'm not an employee of the state of Minnesota. I pay self-employment taxes, and there is no employer to bargain with. I'm a lifelong Democrat, to the pride of my dad and the despair of the rest of my family. I believe in the benefits of unions. I'm a former union member in a previous career, including participation on contract negotiation committees. But licensed family child care providers are independent business owners, and the drive to mandatory unionize this industry is not legal or ethical. Union organizers have practiced deceit and dishonesty over the past years to collect signed representation cards from providers. Child care providers may not understand the required implications of union representation. And if there was transparency, they may not choose to give their bargaining rights to a union. The withholding of union dues from child care assistance payments would make union membership mandatory and not voluntary, especially if you continue to accept child care assistance families. This is not the right direction to go to maintain or increase quality child care choices for families. There are many organizations here in Minnesota that you've been hearing about that are very competently supporting the needs of child care providers. That include offering professional development, mentoring, dealing with business concerns or issues, legislation, and regulations. And yes, Olmsted County has a fabulous Family Child Care Association, FCCI. Some of these organizations do require membership dues. They work off a membership base structure, and the dues cover additional specific benefits, while other organizations do not have a defined membership base or fee structure, like Child Care Works, Ready for K, child care resource and referral. Is there room for another organization to support the needs of the family child care profession? Sure, there would always be room for more. If the child care provider has a voluntary and independent choice to join and to pay any required membership dues, that's great. This union issue needs to be structured as an independent organization with a completely voluntary, not mandatory membership base. Transparency to everyone who would be affected and should not hold hostage state or federal funds. Thank you for your time, and I really appreciate this opportunity to be heard.
Thank you very much. Any questions, members? Thank you very much. Next, Lori Hommeister.
She's not here.
Okay. Then Barbara Wagner. Thank you for letting us know she's not here. Barbara Wagner. Okay. Jackie Seifer.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jackie Seifert, and I have been a licensed child care provider in Olmsted County for 2 years, and I am opposed to the formation of a child care union. Earlier this year, I had a young gal at my door who told me child care resource and referral had her going around and talking with child care providers in the county about their concerns involving their businesses and collecting information from them. We began our conversation about my preschool curriculum and the other ways I help the children prepare for kindergarten, and then it shifted to where I tend to obtain my continuing education requirements for my license. She also talked briefly about the child care rates, and she said that providers deserve better wages and health insurance benefits. She eventually began referring to a card that I could sign. She told me that by filling out this card, I would start receiving more information in the mail regarding the issues we had talked about. I was also told that most of the other providers in my area had been signing this card, and that Olmsted County and our State Child Care Association and Child Care Resource and Referral all support this. I was a little uncertain about this because I had not read anything about this in my Child Care Resource and Referral newsletter. With hesitation, I decided to sign the card with the thought that being a new provider and business owner, it could not hurt to have as much information as I possibly could to improve my child care. A couple weeks had passed, and I shared my experience with my local child care organization during our February board meeting, and this is what I discovered. While I thought I had signed the card to get more information, she failed to mention that by signing this card, I was actually granting SEIU permission to count me as a yes vote for the union. The entire time she was at my home, she never mentioned that she was actually working for the union, nor did she ever show me any identification. She never left any information regarding our visit. So after extensive conversation with my local child care organization, I started the process of getting my card back. After a few weeks, it was eventually returned to me. The attempt to organize a child care union has been done with very skewed and misleading information. From my experiences with them, I don't believe that AFSCME and SEIU are interested in creating a better environment for children in child care. They simply are interested in the possible union dues they could gain from over 11,000 providers. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to share my personal encounter with you that I had with a union organizer who utilized very unethical tactics to get my vote.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the question, looking at these cards that were handed, copies of cards that were handed out by the previous opposition, did you read the card before you signed it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, I did not have time to read the card before I signed it. And again, we have copies of the cards by the first speaker that was up here. The one I believe that I had signed was the big yes with the exclamation mark.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My reading the card here, reading what you was on here before you signed it, and again, I was a business agent and former organizer for the carpenters. I dealt with authorization cards. My idea that I always explain to the people and making sure they read it before they sign it. This is like signing a contract and you're not reading it. It says right here that you're giving your collective bargaining rights to them and you're recognizing that they've got the ability to bargain for you. Now, you said you've got the card back, so after you found out about it, you changed your mind, and that's perfectly capable or able to be done, but
It says right here, it clearly says on there that when you sign this, this is what you're doing.
Definitely, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson. I realize that now, but I did not have the knowledge before, and that's what I'm sharing with you this evening, that the way that I was approached was very misleading with all these supposed facts. It was very skewed and very misleading, but now I know.
Representative Stetzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Did you think, sounds to me like you don't feel that was a very transparent way of communicating the information which was on that card. Would that be accurate?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stetzer, yes, that is actually correct.
And are you concerned that your vote is counted, or do you think that it's not counted, or is it in favor of unionizing?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stetzer, I believe that now that the card has been returned to me, that it is not counted. That's what was told to me. However, by all these other skewed and misleading pieces of information, I don't really know.
Is there anyone who would be able to tell us the whether that vote will be counted or not in this room?
Do you want my guess on that?
That would be something I think we should follow up with.
Is there anybody present that knows whether or not that would have been counted? Otherwise, we can try to find out and get that to committee members. I don't know. I don't know that we're going to find out here tonight. We can follow up on that. Other questions? If not, we are down. You've heard the opponents and the proponents. We are down to our one neutral person who's neither in favor or opposed to this, is Mr. Gannon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, before we go there,
Representative Davis.
If I could have someone from the union, I think my good friend from Dakota County and from Canada County brought up a very valid point. It's very important to me. Do we know if in this proposal, there's a lot of stuff we don't know, but do we know if people that did not join would have to pay their fair share? I think that needs to be on the record. Is there anyone that could answer that question?
Do we have anyone from SEIU
that's a pretty big deal.
Wants to answer?
So no one from SEIU or ask me to put on the record whether they know if there would be a fair share that would have to be paid by the folks that did not sign up for the union. That's a pretty big deal.
That is a big point, and we can try to find that out if we have somebody coming forward. Please identify yourself on the tape and proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
And thank you, by the way, for coming up and answering Representative Davis' question.
Representative Davis, of course. Jim Nyland, Political and Legislative Action Director with AFSCME Council 5. We do not know the answer to that question. That would be dependent on the drafting of any executive order that the governor might issue.
Can I ask a question? Is it your intent? Mr. Chairman, cool. Thank you. Is it your intent to have it as such that all people would have to pay that they're currently licensed? And whether they want to join or not, they would have to pay the fair share?
It would depend on the people, if a union was actually formed, it would depend on the people who decided to belong to the union, whether they wished to have fair share or not.
So obviously the answer is yes, because the people that voted out in place are certain numbers to collect more money. So basically going into the vote, you don't know if you have to pay the fair share, but if it passes, obviously you're going to be paying the fair share.
No, as I said, and as other members of the committee have pointed out, there are unions that do have fair share provisions. There are unions that do not have fair share provisions. And whether there are fair share provisions in any union is up to the members of that union. So no one knows the answer to that question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to the person testifying, what do you believe your union's intention would be to recommend?
We are a democratic union with a small d, and I stress with a small d, and we honestly do believe in worker democracy, and it would be up to those people in that union, if the union is formed, whether they wish to have a fair share arrangement or not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Paul.
Mr. Chair, maybe you could enlighten us into the pool of people that would be allowed a ballot, licensed, not licensed, take subsidized children, doesn't. And then if the union is organized, who would have, who would be underneath the umbrella of the union, you know, looking at the same possible subsets.
And again, Mr. Chair, I do not know the answer to that question. Again, that's dependent on how any possible executive order by the governor is drafted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mr. Chair, I know there's been some discussion as to the powers that the governor has for writing an executive order to call this, and I would hope that the independent research could, you know, further explore this and get back to the members whether that's even allowable underneath the Constitution.
Well, Representative Baum and members and guests, that is a question that we don't know the answer to tonight. We can have House Research look into that. But we, as the Commerce Committee, are purposely not looking at that question. The purview of this committee does not extend to what the governor can or can't do by executive order. And we're not trying to get out of anything here. We all have, I'm sure we all have our own opinions on that. We just don't want to take that up tonight or at any other time. We have other committees that would look into that, and I'm sure if the governor does issue an executive order, there will be lots of legislative looking into that. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When Mr. Shepherd was talking, he made it sound like the governor is not going to issue an executive order. Is that the case, or is that not the case?
Well, Representative Davis and members and people in the room, I don't know. Kind of thought that this issue was going to quietly go away, at least for the time being, after the Senate hearing, and I continue to hear a lot about it. I have not spoken to the governor's office. The last word that we had from anybody in the administration was they weren't sure yet. So if I had to bet yes or no, today at this point I would say no, but I don't think anyone here can answer that. You know, the governor seems like a nice fella, and he has things that he's interested in. I don't know what the Attorney General and his legal advisors are telling him is possible. If they do say it's possible, I don't know that he'll do it.
Well, he is a nice one.
Representative Lieberman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Mr. Nyland a question as well.
Sure.
Mr. Nyland, we heard a couple of speakers here talk about they're worried about some infringement on their business rights, or somebody used the phrase giving their bargaining rights to a union, small business freedoms. I just wanted to see if you could tell me, if this were to go through and say people would pay fair share and be covered by whatever contract, would people still have the right to come to the legislature, say, and testify in front of a committee? I mean, in a regular situation with the kind of union representation that we're all used to, you don't get an individual person who goes and bargains with the employer, say, for a separate health care package or something. But in this situation where we're elected representatives, would people still be able to come to the legislature and say, you know, I think such and such should happen in the area of child care, or I don't like this regulation, or I think we need another, you know what I mean? Are those rights contemplated to still be there?
Representative
Mr. Chair, of course.
Thank you.
It's the biggest softball ever. Good question, Representative. Good question. It's good to have that on record. Good question. Any other questions?
Representative Anderson. I have a question for you. How would you determine what issues you would be bringing forward, say, to the legislature, whatever? How would you get input from your members to decide what issues you would be doing?
Mr.
My original question several hours ago, somebody brought it up just a little bit ago. If I'm a sole proprietor, who am I negotiating with? What am I voting to negotiate with if I am myself my own business owner?
Mr. Chair, there's other states that allow child care providers to unionize, and usually the party that they have sat down and talked to has been the Department of Human Services in most states. That's the best answer I can give you.
Representative Davis?
Okay.
Thank you. And Mr. Nyland, I'll ask you a question, and I think I already know the answer to this. But if the governor does issue his executive order and there's a vote, and there are 11,000 child care providers, and let's say 2,000 of them vote and they vote in favor of the union, would then all of the other childcare providers in the state automatically become members of the union, whether they had voted or not?
Again, that would depend on how any executive order was drafted.
That's what I thought the answer was, but I just thought I'd answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Benson.
One last question. I guess I have an interest in wondering whether or not the union would be a party to setting rates or scales based on region criteria or anything of that nature. I mean, would there be a set scale that business owners would charge parents for the seeing the kids, having the kids?
Mr. Nyland.
No, there is no interest in attempting to set the rates that parents would pay for childcare.
Thank you. We appreciate you being up here.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nyland. Before the child care providers would have a vote, do they know what the dues are? The amount of the dues?
Mr. Nyland.
Yes, the experience I have had that before any new union votes on any arrangement or agreement that might be made as a result of that union being formed, that when they vote on whether to accept that arrangement or agreement, as happened in other states, yes, they do know what the dues are, and in effect, that is a vote on dues.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nyland, you should be referring to other states.
Just everybody in the room, we're already all on record that we're glad we're not Illinois or Maryland.
I heard that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nyland, you infer that in example of other states that when you're looking for somebody to negotiate with, there's the state, one of the state agencies. How about the many providers that do not have any subsidized children? There, to me, is no logical entity of which the union would be negotiating with. Therefore, what is the validity of having a designated representative to negotiate?
Mr. Nyland.
And I'll use the phrase other places. In other places, there's been different arrangements as to whether licensed or unlicensed, subsidized or unsubsidized, had any kind of organization resembling a union. Again, it was dependent on the experience in those other places.
Representative Stetcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's fair. It's my impression that potentially a union representative might negotiate. You mentioned the Department of Human Services, and you would just clarify, possibly you would negotiate what some of those reimbursement rates would be for the providers that you represent?
Mr.
The experience in other places has been no, that the union has not set the rates that parents pay for their child care.
Representative Stetzer.
Just to clarify, not the rates that the parents would charge, but would you be an advocate for changing what the state would reimburse to those providers? Is that possibly what the union would do?
Mr. Chair, certainly. In fact, it has been a longstanding position of my union, Ask Me Council 5, that the state should invest more in early education, even before we started this work that obviously the committee hearing is about. Yes, so yes, we have historically long advocated for increasing investment in early childhood education, including the funding that you're talking about.
Just Mr. Chairman, I want to come ahead.
Mr. Stenger, Representative Stenger, with our final question of the night.
It just seems to me that lawmakers and the legislature determine what those rates are and work with the budgets, and it's a lot of moving parts here in terms of who's representing who. But I don't know that a union representing, S corporations and sole providers and common pop sort of providers have any authority to actually negotiate anything in terms of rates, which are set by the budget, which are determined by legislators. So I guess I'm not sure where this is all headed to.
Mr. Chair, I agree. And obviously, the setting of the level of funding for child care subsidies or the things that we're talking about are clearly within the purview of the legislature and the government.
Go ahead, if you want to identify yourself.
Sure. I'm Denise Walthy with SEIU Kids First. And like I said, I'm a past family child care provider. And this brings up a really good point that's really, really dear to my heart. Subsidies rates in the state of Minnesota have not seen an increase in almost 9 years. As we sit here before you tonight, a week from now,
there'd be cuts of 2.5% subsidies to our families out there. From August, since we started talking to families, the waiting list for families to access affordable family child care through the subsidies CCA has increased from 4,000 to 6,400. We are in bad economic times. We're not investing heavy enough in our children, who should be the top priority in our state. And that's, you know, and that's a big concern. Yes, would we fight for increases to early learning? You bet we would. Right now we're at 1% of the pie for our children in the state. It's unacceptable. And like the provider said earlier, the cuts are coming down next week. We have providers in Rock County that don't have access to a lot of trainings or associations or anything else, or a voice, period, who are going to be paid $1.85 per hour per child before cuts. So, yes, that's dear.
Thank you. And with that, I appreciate everybody's testimony for or against. We will get to Mr. Gannon. We'll thank you for your patience if you
have no statement.
Okay. Well, then, with that, unless anybody on the committee has a further comment or question, thank all of you for being here, both pro and con, for and against. We very much appreciate you taking the time out of your night. Thank you to all the committee members for coming down here, and thanks to the people of Rochester for having us. We are adjourned.